In Isaiah chapter 40, beginning at verse 1, "Comfort, comfort my people, says your God. Speak tenderly to Jerusalem and cry to her that her warfare is ended, that her iniquity is pardoned, and that she has received from the Lord's hand double for all her sins." There's another passage that is probably way more familiar to us on the subject of comfort. And it's from 2 Corinthians chapter 1. Beginning at verse 3, Paul writes, "Blessed be the God and Father of our Lord Jesus Christ, the Father of mercies and the God of all comfort, who comforts us in all our affliction, so that we may be able to comfort those who are in any affliction with the comfort which we ourselves are comforted by God." It's pretty clear there, while Isaiah chapter 40 in verse 1 talks about the comfort that God extends to mankind, this text here in 2 Corinthians chapter 1 brings another element into it. The comfort originates with God, but Paul says the comfort that we receive from God is a tool that we are to use to comfort one another with. Tonight we're going to begin the final series on our subject of getting involved or getting connected, and I'm calling this connecting with those in the valley of grief, or connecting with those who are grieving, as we saw it on the bulletin. Incidentally, I'm working on the theme for next year, and I had a lot of it really worked out in my mind, and I failed to write it down, and so a lot of other things went through my mind and kind of kicked a little bit of dust over it, and so I got to go in there and dig that back out and scratch it back up to the surface, and this time I'm going to write it down so it doesn't get away again. But now, for the remaining Sunday nights that we have in the month of December, we'll talk about connecting with those who are grieving. And I think the graphic and I think the terminology is very appropriate. The valley of grief. Grief is a very interesting subject. It's not always pleasant to think about, and it seems that it's never pleasant to go through and endure. But the Bible is filled with instruction regarding grieving and mourning. Tremendous examples that we could call to mind on the subject of grieving and mourning. In Genesis chapter 23, we read the very touching story of Abraham's grieving over the death of his wife Sarah and the subsequent negotiating for that piece of land on which she was buried, and so many of the others of that family would come to be buried in. You only have to go just a little bit further to Genesis chapter 37, and you'll find Jacob mourning over the loss of his son Joseph. And as you may remember, it would take several years before Jacob would learn that Joseph wasn't really dead. And then in Genesis chapter 50, we find the tables turned and Joseph mourns the death of Jacob, his father. And then when you get over into the 20th chapter of the book of Numbers, you find Israel mourning the death of Aaron, who had shared with Moses the responsibility of leadership to a certain extent in coming up out of Egypt and going into the land of Canaan. Deuteronomy chapter 38, we find Israel then mourning the death of Moses as he died right on the verge of the going into the promised land, then to be led by Joshua. 2 Samuel chapter 1 is a very touching, if not surprising, story of David mourning the death of King Saul and Jonathan, his dear friend. Even though Saul had spent a great portion of his later life trying to kill David again and again. And in the 18th chapter of 2 Samuel, we find David mourning the death of Absalom, his son. And who could forget that wail that David sent out? Oh, Absalom. Absalom, my son, would to God I had died rather than you. Oh, Absalom, my son, my son. The story of Job opens with the story of the loss of all of his children whom he mourned and grieved. Jeremiah. We remember him as the weeping prophet, and he literally did mourn the sin and the impenitence of God's people and the fact that they were ultimately carried away into the captivity of Babylon. There are several references to mourning and grieving in the New Testament, example-wise, but maybe the one that should stand out in our minds the most is recorded there in John chapter 11, where Jesus grieves over the grave of his dear friend Lazarus. The interesting thing is, though, that in that story, Jesus only grieved for Lazarus for just a short time. You might say, you could probably say for a relative few minutes before he raised him from the dead. But still, we're impressed as Jesus weeps because his dear friend Lazarus has died. Tonight, I'd like for us to spend our time getting, maybe we should say getting acquainted with grief. Now, I know that sounds kind of bad, and that doesn't really... I don't really mean it the way it sounds, but there is a lot about grief that we need to back up and take a look at and be reminded of. The theme that we're to be talking about is getting connected with or connecting with those who are grieving. But in order to do a better job of that, I believe one of the things that can be very important is to be reminded of some really important things about grief itself. Only when we have a better understanding of grief can we do a better job of helping and assisting those who are themselves grieving. And so I'd like for us to begin with these five important facts about grief and grieving. And I'm not going to tell you anything that you really don't know or that you haven't heard. Nothing, should I say, nothing on this list is going to come as a shock to you. But I do think there are some really important reminders. No matter who you are, no matter where you are, as was referenced a few minutes ago in the prayer, there are many in this congregation who are grieving. The loss of loved ones, even within the last week, there never seems to be a time when we are very far removed from the death or the death experience as many of us have gone through time and time again. And so whether you are facing a recent tragedy, or whether you have moved on from it a little bit, or whether you are living in a situation that seems to be ongoing, death is not the only cause of grief. That's one thing that we probably need to remember, because most of the time we think about grieving in terms of getting over the loss of a loved one. There are other things that can cause grief. Let's look at these five. Number one, grieving is a real normal. It is real and a very normal part of human life or the human experience. It would be foolish to think that a human being could live on this earth for any amount of time, a substantial amount of time, and not experience grief. In the very same way that God placed within us not only the ability to love and to appreciate and to long for and to desire, there is also within the human makeup the matter of grieving. And so, no matter who you are, grieving is real. Nobody is exempt. Nobody gets to say, well, I'm not going to go through that myself. Everybody grieves. It's a normal part of human life. Grieving is individual, and it should not be considered to be nor treated as something that is comparative. Now, let me tell you what I mean by that. Have you ever heard anybody say, well, I'm sorry for your loss, and I know that you'll really miss your mother, but you know, until you've lost your wife, you have no idea what grieving is all about. That makes you want to grab somebody and sort of shake them a little bit, doesn't it? What is it about us as human beings that we think that whatever we've gone through is the ultimate, and until you've done that, you haven't really tasted of it at all? Grief is individual. Grieving, the process. In the very same way that we are all individuals, different in our personalities, different in so many aspects in our lives, not a sinful difference, but we are people of variety. And grieving affects different people in different ways. And to say that the ultimate grief is the grief of the loss of a mate, lifelong mate, or to say that the ultimate grief is the grief of burying a child, or to say the ultimate grief is whatever, that's not the way it works. Grief is not to be treated as something that is comparative. In fact, the Scriptures caution us about comparing ourselves to ourselves and among ourselves. In fact, saying we are not wise. This is a hard thing for some folks to learn. Grieving is not a sign of weakness. You ever heard that old-fashioned saying? I say old-fashioned because it's kind of gone out of style now, but there was a time when it was really common and pretty much universally accepted, real men don't cry. Things have changed, haven't they, with our culture. That never was true, but that was something that a lot of people have said. And there may have been some in some cultures, in some times, in some areas, who might have said, well, you know, grieving is a sign of weakness. No, no. And then we need to recognize the fact that grief should not be ignored. It's not something that if you leave it alone long enough, it'll go away. It is a process. that needs attention. It should not be an all-consuming fire. But it is something that needs attention. Let's go one more step. Grieving does not justify the abandoning of duty. Grieving doesn't get us a pass from obeying God. It doesn't give us the right not to meet our responsibilities. Certainly there are ways and all different kinds of ways that as we minister to those who are grieving, we can assist them in even in their duties and responsibilities, but it is not that they are exempt. This is a part of the element of kindness that goes along with connecting with those who are grieving. The duty, the responsibility doesn't go away. It's still there. Not too long ago, I came across a little book. Can't remember the writer's name, but she had some really good things in the book on the subject of grief and grieving. And I believe the book was entitled, How to Go On Living When Your Loved One Has Died. Now, that hits you pretty hard, but the title... The title speaks well of the content of the book. I've borrowed a few things from that book and factored in a few things that I've learned thus far in my very brief life. And I want to share with you these keys to handling grief. Let me say from the beginning that some of these will come across as things that we need to be doing for others, for the ones who are grieving. Some of these may come across as the kind of things that we ourselves need to do as we grieve. All of them can be seen from either of those perspectives. And so whether grief is fresh in your life or whether you are helping someone who is grieving, these keys will, I think, be helpful. Number one, recognize that everyone must yield to the painful process of grieving. You can't go over it, you can't go under it, you can't go around it. You have got to go through it. And that's very important. Because there may be some of us who, if we don't say it in words, we seem to act as though we believe that we're too tough to grieve, or we're too strong to grieve, or back to that previous point, we think maybe grieving is a sign of weakness. You've got to go through it. You've got to work through it in order to come out whole on the other side. Number two, acknowledge that grief, well, that it is perfectly normal to desire to avoid the pain of grief. That sounds kind of foolish when you put it in words like that, but the fact is, most of us, if we got right down to it, we would probably have to confess, you know, I'm really scared to death of the pain of grief. It obviously is something we'd like to avoid. But it cannot be avoided. It is one of the parts of life that even though it be painful, it has to be done. It has to be dealt with. Number three, be careful to avoid unrealistic expectations of the grieving. I've heard people say sometimes, hey, you just need to get over that. I won't deny that there may be some times when that kind of approach borders on being appropriate. but not in general. Again and again, God's Word gives us the instruction, such as in Romans 12 and verse 15, to rejoice with those who rejoice and weep with those who weep. The consideration that goes along with serving God, the consideration for brothers and sisters in Christ, where we look not upon the things of ourselves, but look upon the things of others as being more important. We need to be careful that we're not being unrealistic, either of ourselves in our grief or of those around us who are grieving. Number four. Utilize a careful balance between social support and solitude. Both of those things are very important in dealing with grief. There is a tremendous amount of therapeutic benefit from being around and receiving comfort from others as we grieve. I know that I've told you that little story. I never tire of telling it because it's so precious. The little 4-year-old whose next door neighbor, elderly folks, wife died. And he asked his mom if he could go and see Mr. Jones after his wife had died. And his mother said, "I suppose it would be okay." So he went next door to Mr. Jones's house. He stayed for some time. And finally returned home, and Mom said, "Did you see Mr. Jones?" "Yes, ma'am." "What'd you do? You were there a long time." He said, "Nothing much. I just sat in his lap and helped him cry." Social support is very, very important in grieving. But there is also value to solitude. There are some times when grieving needs to be done alone. Neither of those two things should be the rule across the board by themselves. They should each be worked together as a tool appropriately. Number five, know that grief involves not only emotional responses, but also coping with practical problems as well. Now, what I mean by that is, you know, there are some mental, personal, and deeply private adjustments that have to be made in the grieving process. At the same time, there may very well be a bedroom full of stuff that you'd just rather close the door on and not ever deal with again. That's not healthy. The emotional response is vital, but it's also helpful to take care of the practical outward things as well. Now, nobody's saying that you need to come home from the funeral home or from the cemetery and have a yard sale that afternoon. That would be a little bit silly. But we don't need to try to be avoiders. Number six. Sometimes grief needs an interruption. Enjoying some occasion in life is not a betrayal of the deceased loved one. Taking the weekend off to go to a ball game when that family member that you've just lost was a tremendous fan. And thinking, I can't do that. That would be a betrayal. There's nothing wrong with taking a break from the grieving process. It is often very helpful. A diversion can work wonders. Number 7. Discover ways to replenish adequate rest, good nutrition, awareness of current events. Get caught up on what's going on around you. Get involved in some social efforts. All of those things can be helpful to kind of keep your system replenished and keep you on your toes, so to speak. Number 8. This one comes straight out of the manual of the grief counselors. Avoid making big changes during the grieving process. No new job, no new house, no new boyfriend, no new girlfriend. Most grief counselors say for at least a year. Give yourself that much before you take a huge step. Number 9. Purposefully, the key word here is purposefully, employ physical activity to release pent-up emotions. Do not lock yourself in your house and never go outside again. I don't care if Walmart will deliver your groceries. You need to get out. You need to go through some activities to help release some of those things that you've locked up inside. And number 10, don't let grief become an excuse for ignoring good physical health. I think we'd have to say that many of us have seen this happen to people many times. As they grieve the loss, especially the loss of a mate, I've seen the survivor just take an approach of absolute total neglect of himself or herself and justify it with grieving. As I've said many times in the last few minutes, grieving is a process. A process has a beginning and an end. Many of these keys that we've just looked at are the kind of things that will help us to get through the process to the end. And if we go off the rails on some of these very important issues, we may bog ourselves down in debilitating grief that may very well prevent us from fulfilling our duties and our responsibilities to God and to our fellow men. And nobody is a better grief counselor than someone who has successfully grieved. There are a lot of people out there who can use that extra little bit of help that comes from having been through the same experience. Or, to put it more in the words of the Apostle Paul there in 2 Corinthians chapter 1, the comfort that we receive from God is useful in comforting one another in our afflictions. Lord willing, next Sunday night we'll turn our attention more toward some of the things that we, who are not necessarily grieving, can do to help those who are grieving. If you're subject to the Lord's invitation in any way, we invite you to respond as we stand together and sing this song.